From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Former Salt Lake Tribune reporter Ben Fulton says the strained relationship between Mormons and non-Mormons is something everyone talks about but cannot really talk about. He says it's present and not present, everywhere and nowhere. Because, he writes, most people in Utah are too angry to chart its territory and its terms of engagement. But today in the program, we're going to try and explore the way Mormons and non-Mormons interact in this state, not at work, not in public, but socially. You often hear about the clumsy behavior of zealous believers, but this cuts both ways. If you're not Mormon, how about you? Do you socialize with LDS folks who live nearby or invite them to parties? And if not, why not? We're talking about the complicated dynamics in these relationships today and how they play out in your neighborhood. After the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we hope you'll consider joining them. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. Visit us online at KUER.org for details. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Everyone knows the Mormon guy in the office. Or let me switch that around. Everyone knows the non-Mormon guy in the office. And he's great. He's funny, seems to have a cool family, works hard, and there you are, people of different cultures getting along, hanging out in the break room. So you can feel good about the fact that you have an open mind about people of different backgrounds. But here's the question. Would you invite that guy to your party on the weekend? Because that seems to be the real test in these relationships between non-Mormons and Mormons in this state. Not the way we interact in the workplace or even in public, but in our private lives, in our neighborhoods. There seems to be a bright line that separates the cultures here. It's not entirely unique to Utah, of course, but there are parts that are very particular to this place. And today in the program, we're talking about them. Alcohol, of course, is one of those barriers in these relationships, but there's more to it than that. We're hoping to hear from you throughout the hour, though I should say we're going to try to get beyond the horror stories, though we know there are some, and find the reasons these relationships can be awkward and can be clumsy. How do you perceive these interactions? Do you invite your Mormon or non-Mormon neighbors to social events? If you're non-Mormon, what's it like living among a religious majority? How do you respond, for example, if you're invited to a church event? If you're Mormon, what's it like interacting with non-Mormons? How would you respond if you were invited to a social gathering where you know there's going to be alcohol? What do you want to know about the other way the other side lives? 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us here in the studio is Ann Cannon. She is, you may know, a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, member, I should say, of the LDS Church. Ann, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We have Eric Eliason with us, a professor of folklore in the English department at Brigham Young University. He's also an LDS Church member, joins us today from the studios of KBYU in Provo. And Professor, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Former Utah lawmaker Frank Pignanelli is with us, Salt Lake City attorney, political advisor, lobbyist, writes a column you may know for the Deseret News with LeVar Webb. He's non-Mormon, grew up Catholic, and Frank, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
And Allison Enerson is with us, the manager of the Winter Farmers Market for the Downtown Alliance, former executive director of Local First Utah, also not a Mormon. Allison, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I want to start with begin broadly, if we could. First of all, Frank, let me start with you. How do you describe the social interactions between Mormons and non-Mormons? How are you seeing it broadly? We'll get to the particulars as we go.
Well, broadly, you have both sides, people well-intended, like you said, in the workplace, but they're nervous about. Can we do anything with them socially? And some of it is alcohol. I think there's a lot of non-Mormons nervous about the alcohol. But there's a nervousness. I don't want to offend anyone, but I want to make sure that they know that I'm caring, that I'm understanding. It's a little bit like the Obama thing. I may want to criticize Obama, but I want to be viewed as being racist. And so I'm nervous if I interact with these neighbors and friends, and we don't know if I don't like funeral potatoes, are they going to get offended?
Right.
You know, if I don't know what kind of beard that I should be around on the part of the Mormons. There's a nervousness there, and having grown up here, I think much more is made by both sides about how to interact.
Allison, what about you? Doesn't work well? Do you have a kind of negative sense of it all?
I don't have a negative sense of it. I mean, it's definitely getting less negative the older I get, because it becomes much more about my neighborhood, my kids' interactions at school. And I think those relationships really have to be there. I mean, if you want to live in a secure neighborhood, you have to know who lives around you. Mm. And so I was definitely...
Wait, what does that mean? So I get to know my Mormon neighbors?
I get to know them.
Yeah.
I want them to know who I am. I want them to know who my children are. I want to be able to call them if I see, you know, something going on that's strange in the neighborhood. And that's just, I think, a function of getting older. You know, I didn't have that attitude when I was younger. I simply didn't care, you know. But it's different when you really join your community, as particularly, I think, with having children. So I think I definitely interact much more than I used to as a grown-up with children. And I think it is. It's not a necessary evil. It's a necessary pleasure when you start viewing it in a really sort of mature community way, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what about you? How are you thinking about
it? Well, you know, I mean, I think my experience is that I was just telling Frank and Allison before the program began that I live in the Avenues, which is actually like living in Eugene, Oregon in certain kinds of ways. I mean, it's so we're Mormons are kind of a minority there. We're a majority minority. But, you know, my neighborhood is basically non-Mormon. And I will say this, over the years, we've been there for almost 30 years. I have really awesome neighbors who have been very, very inclusive. They make it a point to invite their Mormon neighbors to functions and gatherings. That said, you know, we probably don't hang out with each other as much as I think we would all like to. But I really see people on both sides making a lot of effort. And it's great.
Let me, Erica Lyson, I wanted to get your sense of whether you think, are there kind of bigger historical social forces at play when we talk about these relationships? I mean, do you see it in the sense, for example, Mormons have often been outsiders in their experience? Does that come into play in what's happening in the 21st century?
Oh, sure. And I think one of the things that's fascinating about Utah is that, unlike virtually everywhere else in the United States, the distinction between Mormons and non-Mormons is the most important social division that there is in Utah. Mm. I mean, it's a fairly friendly division, but nonetheless, this has characterized the state since its founding, and is something unique about this place. And my Mormon and non-Mormon, and I think we might be forgetting here the friendly term of Jack Mormon as another social division in Utah. We talk about this all the time as professional folklorists, and it's of great interest to us professionally.
I guess the question I had is whether or not is this human nature. You know, we tend to be take the Mormon part out of it. We tend to be tribal as a species, so we tend to gather as like-minded people.
I think so, and in some ways, it might not just be human nature, but I think in some ways, it might be unavoidable. I mean, unless you're willing to draw the circle of your community to include all of humankind, and even then, you may be excluding other sentient beings like dolphins or whales or something, you're going to exclude some group of people somehow. If whether you form a voluntary group or an involuntary group, there's people who either going to decide not to join or feel like they were forced to join and not want to participate. And so we kind of naturally form groups of community, and every group of community that there is, a byproduct of that, a flip side of that, is that there are people who are not in that community and are outside of it. Now, luckily, we live in a society of multiple overlapping communities, and which are nested inside of each other. And it sounds to me like Utah does a pretty good job these days of having a broader overarching community that includes Mormons of all stripes and non-Mormons as well.
Doug, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Could I just jump in here really quick? You talk about exclusion, and I think that does happen. I will say this. I think a lot of exclusion that happens in both camps, if you want to like label it that way, is really unintentional. A lot of it just happens because of time commitments and involvement that people have. Like one of the things that I'm told quite often, and I think it's very true, is that Mormons tend to be insular. They tend to be focused on their church assignments and their families. And especially here in Utah, that does happen a lot. But it does take a lot of time. Like, there tends to be a lot of family here if you're here. And that's not true. I mean, that's true for other people as well. But it eats into time. And so the exclusion often isn't, there's often no malice there.
Yeah. Because I've got 3 hours of church I've got to go to. And then.
Right. It is true as far as the statistics and numbers go, too. I mean, Mormons tend to be more committed to their religion. And Mormon as a religion tends to require more of people's time. And unlike a lot of other places in the West where people are very mobile, Utah tends to, I mean, Mormons do their moving around in groups and then tend to stay. And so a lot of Mormons in Utah, compared to places elsewhere in the country, have lots of extended family. And that just eats up a lot of people's social time. And I know a lot of Mormons I know of would like to be
family
more,
free.
Yeah, more family free is a way of putting it.
The spirit of Thanksgiving. Let's just put it all out there. Yeah.
Frank Pignanelli jumped
in. The one distinction, I'm just going to say, I'm not disagreeing. He's a professor, but I will. This isn't just a Methodist and Presbyterians and Catholics. It is very different. I have to remind my non-Mormon friends is that every other faith, and I mean every other faith, has a professional clergy.
Yep.
These guys don't. So they have all these assignments, and I just think most Mormons are exhausted because they're filling in all this stuff. And see, where it really comes to play, because even as much as I love living here, like my kids are not LDS, and we're constantly inviting the LDS kids over where they have a great time, but we're always doing the organizing.
Yeah.
And what I've come to realize is that it's not that they're excluding, it's just they're just so used to having the playtime through the church and stuff like that. And so non-Mormons need to understand – It's not, for the most part, intentional.
Yeah.
It's just there is so much time commitment trying to keep this very vibrant church alive without any professional clergy.
Yeah.
And we have to remember that.
Allison?
I just wanted to make my personal example of the exclusionary part of it is when my 5-year-old started kindergarten, there was this culture of mothers that all knew each other and their kids all knew each other, and I had no idea who they were.
And they knew each other because they went to church together.
They're all in the ward, yep. in their ward yep. together, yep. yeah. And so you know, through the school process, I met my neighbor who literally lives 2 doors down
from
me.
Right.
And it was crushing. We have children the exact same age. They're in the same class. And they love each other. So now I'm interacting with her all the time. But it's really heartbreaking to think they could have had that interaction a year back.
Like a year before.
Yeah, we could have already had this friendship going. I'm looking forward to meeting more of these.
Okay, so
moms.
So it's unintentional. It's a function of circumstance. Okay, I get that. I want to move beyond that a little bit, not excluding that or not dismissing that in any way, but I want to get to some very particular reasons why the interaction seems strained at times. Let me though get some calls because I want to get people involved in the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us, and our email address radiowest@kuer.org. Let's go to Wesley, who is joining us from Park City. Wesley, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Case in front of what you're talking about. I was a teenager in Provo, active Mormon, non-drinker. I now live in Park City. I'm an inactive Mormon and a drinker. And the first party I went to in Park City, there were some people who had just moved in, and they were making a joke about a business party they had gone to where they had been served punch. Alcohol wasn't being served because it was a Mormon owner of the business, and they were investors in it. And they were making a joke about it, and there was a Mormon there at the party, and I could tell he was very hurt by the comments that were being made. And here I was on the other side of the aisle, understanding that the comments being made by these two non-Mormons were not meant to offend, but they were highly offensive to this Mormon that was there at the party. And I thought, you know, he's not going to ever come back to one of these neighborhood parties, and sure enough, he never did. And so it's interesting to me, having been on both sides, how both sides are like two ships passing in the night. They're both very offended by actions of the other and very resentful, but I don't know if they fully understand why the other side's acting the way they're acting.
Well, let me ask, Anne, you've talked about, so you probably go to parties in the avenues where you are where they may not necessarily guess that you're a Mormon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's it like sort of being undercover? Do you hear things that are, distasteful? I mean, if you switch the word Mormon for Black or Jew or something like that. I mean, do you find things that are a little questionable?
Well, not now, because at this point, pretty much people know. And I have to say that the people I know tend to be very respectful and very nice that way. There have been times, though, when I've been in situations where people don't know and just assume I'm not. And feel free to express frustration with, as they say, the dominant culture. It's like nobody dares even say Mormon. But and it is a little bit uncomfortable, but I do understand where it's coming from. I mean, sometimes I do want to say, you know, some of the things that bother you about what goes on also bother me, and like other Mormons as well. But we do make assumptions about each other sometimes, I think.
Go ahead, Eric, Professor.
You mentioned, I think it was Anne mentioned, living in the avenues and the demographic that it has now of mostly upper middle class, liberal, non-Mormon. Well, it used to be the place where all the general authorities live. And I think if you move around the state, you see not just one dynamic, but lots of different dynamics. My experience in Utah County, which is very different than up in Salt Lake County, living, you know, Utah County is about 89% LDS. The town where I live, Springville, is, you know, in the mid-90s. And the neighborhood where I live, I know exactly in my ward where the two non-Mormon families live. And, right. And you know, I like to think I would be social, but the opportunity. But I always buy her Girl Scout cookies when she comes by. That's for sure. But it's a very different a dynamic where depending on where you go from place to place.
Yeah, and one of the things I just wanted to say, like, because people know I'm Mormon, sometimes I'm uncomfortable because I don't want them to think that I'm trying to push my Mormonism on them, or I want them to convert. Mm-hmm. Like, we had a family move into our neighborhood a while ago, and I went over and I took them some strawberries, and I said, okay, I'm a Mormon, I'm bringing you strawberries, but I don't want you to join my church. In fact, don't join my church.
And I insist.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
but do they believe it? Here's the point. I mean, I know you say that, and I think people who are of good-natured sort of disposition like you have and may say that, but do they think you, Allison? Do you think they mean it? I mean, isn't that an essential tenet of Mormonism that, in fact, no matter what,
excluding Ann Cannon entirely? Yes, usually. No, I mean, I think that was one of the first families that came when we moved onto our street. It's only a mile away from where we lived before. First knock on the door was the Bishop of the Ward. Oh. We didn't know him. We didn't know who he was. We didn't know he was affiliated with the church. And he hands us like a neighborhood packet. Literally, we had moved from like a half a mile away. Like, we know the neighborhood. He invited us to dinner, and we went, and it was entirely, you know, a proselytizing event. And that was fine. I mean, it's fine.
It wasn't fine.
We've never had dinner again.
Yeah.
Just because.
But wait, you don't mean that when you say it was fine.
Well, I mean, it's what they do. And if it's like, if you're going to do business in Utah, you're going to have to learn to drink punch. That's just the way it is. Yeah. Sometimes you're going to have to drink punch. And sometimes there will be a cash bar. Usually always a cash bar.
Cash bar.
But that's just the way it is. And it's like it is. You have to bend a little. Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think this is a big point for you, Frank, right? I mean, you have to learn
to. This is a great place to live. I love living in Utah. I love it. I love it. And and I guess I view, hey, they've been coming at me since I was born to come over. And I've been through more flip charts and things like that. So, and I view it differently. I view it as I'm honored. You want to share your faith. And you want to, although I've got some issues, I've read the books and everything, but I always view it as an honor. I mean, the missionaries were at my doorstep last week. And I said, elders, that's great. I have some questions here. But I view it as an honor they actually want me to join. Anyone who wants me to join anything is obviously. I'm always blessed by that. So I think there's a little bit like that's what it's like here. Mm-hmm. But I would say most of the population, they're not trying to get you in. You have some people that are very earnest about it. But most of the population more care about their community and their neighborhood. They just in earnest want to get to know their neighbors when they have the time. Mm-hmm. They want to do it.
Yeah. And do you think they worry about that being an ulterior, like Anne said, she wanted to give him strawberries. She didn't want there to be anything attached to it. They worry about everything they do is going to be perceived as having a motive.
Well, I want to talk about that, actually.
There's a psychosis
especially where
here.
We live. Like, you know, people are just always like I'm in our primary, for instance, and we always want to invite all the neighborhood children, but we have that conversation.
Should
well, they just
we,
think we're being nice to them because we want them to sign up or whatever. Like, we'll show them where the water is. We can put you under right away. Not a problem. You know, so it's that whole thing. It's a tricky dance.
There's also, and it'd be interesting what the professor has to say about this, but I believe there is a subtle psychosis going on here. There is, look, they were forced out of where they were in the back east. They came You know, they crossed the plains. They came here. You know, within a couple of years, the federal government declares war, essentially, on the Mormons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Fort Douglas is there to have the cannons aimed at Brigham Young's house and everything like that. And then the federal government almost put the church out of business in the 1880s. So there's a little bit – that's why it's such a passive-aggressive state. There is a little bit of pleasing here. We want to be friends. We don't always know how to, but we want to be friends.
But we're trying. Professor, what do you think?
It's a good story from history that illustrates just that. And one of the things I wanted to point out, too, about Utah's history is a lot of states have a very distinctive identity. And so I went to graduate school in Texas, and a common bumper sticker was, I wasn't born in Texas, but I got here as soon as I could. And so this sense that you could become part of that state fully, no matter, you know, as a Mormon, I didn't feel like I was excluded at all from that. Now, Utah also has a very distinctive history, which has a challenge as well as an opportunity. I mean, the opportunity is, of course, that the Mormon history is so important here. But then, well, what if you're not Mormon? How do you claim a true sense of being a Utahan?
Yeah.
But, you know, the Gentile community in Utah has as long and illustrious history as the Mormon one. I mean, and I use that old-fashioned term very consciously. You know, Gentile, and that it means it's a term that's been used a long time here in Utah. It's kind of fallen out of favor.
We know what you mean, Professor. We know
non-Mormon. The story goes, and I don't know if this ever really actually happened, but it's telling that the story goes that the cathedral in Salt Lake City was built on land that was set aside by Brigham Young for the Catholics to have. And he wanted Utah to be kind of a showcase of the kind of religious freedom that Mormons themselves wanted to have, and they wanted other people of other religious groups to feel that way too. Now, does that mean that everybody who came to Utah who was non-LDS always felt comfortable all the time? No. And there were certain times in the state's history or the territory's history, I guess, when that certainly would have not been the case. But I think it's like Frank said, there is kind of this a little bit of passive-aggressive schizophrenia of Mormons conflicted among ourselves of how do we deal with this.
Yeah, let me take a call. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. Wesley, thanks, by the way. Back to South Jordan, and Perry is with us. Perry, hi.
Hi. This is such a rich topic for discussion. I'm trying to narrow it down, taking notes. I'm a non-Mormon. I grew up in South Dakota, Minneapolis, and so on. I think the biggest difference that I see is it's so much harder to develop relationships, at least deep, meaningful relationships here. I have great neighbors. I love them. They love me. You know, we watch each other's houses when we go on vacation and things like that. But I just can't sit down and have a conversation with them that doesn't go beyond a certain point. And then if I start getting deep about religion and or whatever, politics even, there's kind of a glaze that comes over the eyes, and it's almost like, you know, they're not supposed to talk about that sort of stuff. And anywhere else I can have these conversations. I'll meet somebody here, immediately start clicking with them, and I'll say, you're not LDS, are you? And they'll say, yeah, you know, sometimes. I'm not saying always. But very, very rare do I have that opportunity to meet somebody and just click with them, and then I find out that they might be Mormon. Mm-hmm. And one other thing is I've got a 4-year-old and some 18-month-old daughters, and I'm scared to death about raising them here and not just having them constantly being indoctrinated. And I know that might just be a stereotype and a cliche, but it frightens me because I've had different friends with different experiences say, yes, my kids were ostracized, or no, that's absolutely a fallacy. It just doesn't happen like that anymore.
Yeah.
So
we got the same comment from Kate, who writes, I worry for my young daughters who have never attended church. How are they going to be accepted by their Mormon peers as they grow older? Perry, thanks. 801-585-WEST, the number to join us. This from Jesse, who writes, as an adult in my late 20s, most Mormon friends have multiple kids. My friends and I do not. And I usually don't invite them because I'm worried some of my non-Mormon friends will offend the Mormons. I think politics and ideologies clash a lot between Mormons and non-Mormons, and it's hard to overcome that in a social setting in Utah where political tensions are already high. Frank, what do you think about that? And Allison, I want to get your perspective on this too. Is it really a religion, or is it just because there's the Dems and the Republicans, or should we be speaking in those terms?
Well, you do have obviously, it's a very conservative state, and there's some of the people who have maybe are Democrats or they're not conservatives living there. They feel like they're isolated. I do think it goes beyond just religion. I do think it is a conservative philosophy that bothers some of the people here. And again, it's overwhelming. I mean, the state's predominantly Republican, and it's a conservative Republican state. And so there's a frustration. Is my voice being heard?
Right.
And that's what I think you pick up more than anything else. Yeah. See, I think it goes beyond religion. It is that I have this viewpoint, and it's not being represented in the legislature. It's not being represented in the governor's office or even in my city council. And so that's – I think it's more, much more than religion. It's that.
Yeah. Allison, what about you? This idea, this kind of – that it's about power in some ways too, mm-hmm. And if you're not Mormon or if you're not of a political persuasion, you're not represented. You don't really count in some way.
I think that's absolutely true. But just going back quickly to what the gentleman said about not inviting Mormon friends over because he's afraid the non-Mormons will offend the Mormons. I mean, I think we have to get past that kind of mentality. I mean, it's just if people want to have a conversation and it's conflicting and there's an argument going on, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to have a discussion about it. I don't think people should be afraid of that. Right. And I don't think you need to protect adult Mormons from opinions that are outside of their own. They're lovely, strong people who can make an argument. You know, we don't have to protect them from anything.
Well, that's important because what – Mm-hmm. For all my life, I usually spend Friday or Saturday night I after work I'll go to a bar on Friday nights. Almost every single time, there's a Mormon with me.
Yeah,
because I will invite them. We'll go and invite mm-hmm. them. So that way, you know, mm-hmm. they say, look, I don't care if you drink Diet Coke or not. Just be with us.
Right.
And I think you have to have that outreach. Don't worry about getting me offended because the most part they won't be.
Yeah.
Right. I'm never offended when I'm with people who drink alcohol. I mean, I lived in New York State for a while and I didn't drink and all my friends did and they just assumed I was in recovery. I mean, I think that, you know what I mean? Like, so it's maybe less of an issue for a lot of Mormons than sometimes we think.
I think
a lot of it does stem from the whole political power structure here because the liquor laws are so, you know, weird and there's all of that stuff. I mean, so people make assumptions that maybe they don't need to make.
But wait, Professor, let me get your perspective because you're not in the Avenue. So let me get your perspective on alcohol. Anne is very open-minded about going to a party where there might be alcohol, sir, but I want to know, and Anne, I want to hear you on this too.
Okay.
Let me ask you, Professor. Would most of the people in – maybe not you, but most of the people in your ward – if somebody invited them over to a barbecue on Saturday night and they knew there was going to be a big tub with ice and lots of beer in it, would they not go just solely for that reason?
Would they go just for the beer?
Would they not go solely for the reason that there's going to be alcohol served and that makes them uncomfortable or they're imposing some sort of judgment on the people who were drinking or just they don't want to be in a place – you know, what's that Mormon term, stay out of evil places?
Oh, avoiding the appearance of evil?
Of evil, that's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll have to ask them. I wouldn't think so, but
some might. I mean, I have to say, I grew up in Provo, and so there the whole thing where there are gradations of Mormons. Like, you know, you just don't – I mean, there's just not one monolithic Mormon type.
True.
So, you know, I mean, you have to, like, look at that. And there are probably Mormons who don't want to be around alcohol. I will say that. But I think maybe – you know, give people a chance to speak for themselves about that.
Yeah. Well, I do. So, well, Professor, what do you think? I mean, you're saying that you're not saying that's not keeping people from going to some of these parties because they feel uncomfortable with alcohol.
Right. My neighborhood is so thoroughly Mormon that some might go to that event just because they might think they might never have an opportunity again ever to do something that
interesting. Doug, it has never happened. But, that's the point. It's never happened. But, there's no precedent for it.
That is the point.
Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting to me about what a lot of the callers were saying about concerns about you know, children growing up here, you know, fits with one of the interesting sociological facts about Utah is that traditionally, at least, that in the West, people tend to be less religious than they are in the Midwest and in the South, with Utah as a big exception. Mm. And that doesn't just hold for the Mormons. It also holds for non-Mormons here who tend to be more religious than surrounding states, say Colorado and Arizona, Nevada, and whether that's because it's an oppositional thing to like, well, the Mormons are religious, I got to be religious to send my kids to Catholic school, things, whereas otherwise I might not have, or if it's because of the environment that Frank mentioned that he liked in Utah, in part because of the Mormon presence, that they are happy to have kids here. I'm not sure which one is which.
Yeah, Allison.
I just want to speak to the child-rearing thing. I mean, having lived here, having lived in New York City, it's much more interesting to be around people who challenge your views. Mm-hmm. So while I am apprehensive about some of the things my kids will be around and some of the cultural influences and religious influences, I think it will make them stronger humans. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to articulate what they really believe. They'll be able to have those discussions. Mm-hmm. And they won't be part of a larger herd mentality. We have a herd mentality here. And so I'm kind of, even though I'm scared about it,
yep,
I think it's going to be an interesting ride. And I'm not afraid of it. That's my personality.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Deb is with us in Salt Lake. Deb, sorry for the wait. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thank you. My comment is I've lived all over the U.S., and I spent several years in New Orleans, and I found exactly that same idea, only it's kind of inverse. It's Catholic. If you're the wrong type of Catholic or you're Mormon, you don't go anywhere in the community. It gave me a greater understanding for non-members here. And I'm Mormon myself, but I don't necessarily fit the culture. So I find myself, to a large extent, ostracized by a lot of my fellow travelers.
Wait, Deb, what do you mean? I don't necessarily fit the culture. What specifically do you mean by that?
I find the people here fairly close-minded and not terribly tolerant of other people. You mentioned earlier that you didn't feel like, you know, that they didn't feel like there was a prejudice against non-Mormons here. And I think there absolutely is. I find Utah to be very insular. If you're not from the right family, if you don't have the right kind of pedigree, you don't go anywhere here. That's just been my experience.
Yeah. Deb, glad you called. Thanks for being candid. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Back to the phones. Ellie is with us in Salt Lake. Ellie, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Thanks for the show. Sure. I listen all the time.
Good.
I myself am a Mormon, and I grew up in Texas Pride right there as well, but I spent my 20s in New York City and in Boston, and I found that if you're comfortable with who you are, that is what people are attracted to. And so most of my friends growing up, I was the only Mormon in my high school and one of the only Mormons in my college. And I find that living out here in Utah now in my 30s, some of my closest friends here are also not Mormons. And I think if you're comfortable with who you are, if you can respect other people's religions, expect them to respect mine. And it's about respect. I respect anyone in their belief. They can choose how to live, and I choose how to live. And that's what it comes down to. And I find that you can build great friendships based on respect.
Yeah. Allison, that idea of respect, I wanted to thank you very much, Ellie. I appreciate that. 801-585-WEST is the number. I wanted to ask you this, because this is one of those questions that should be directed to people who are obviously not Mormon. Do you find that some non-Mormons make some knee-jerk judgments about Mormons and or either of other people who have religion? Do they see them as gullible in some way or lacking in sophistication? And do they see the rules, for example, Mormons in particular, about alcohol, for example, as kind of silly and parochial? You know, they look sort of like, this is ridiculous. What is your problem?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I'm not going to lie. And I think there are definitely people who aren't that way and don't think that way. Ellie is clearly what we would call a non-Utah Mormon.
Yeah.
That's a big part of
the
conversation.
That's a big part of it, right? Yes, yeah. Yes.
I didn't grow up here. She was the other in her school, and that formed her identity. She wasn't part of the herd. She was totally different. She was the only Mormon there. She was the only Mormon in college. That formed her identity. And that informed her ability to make relationships in the world. And I think that's huge. That's exactly what I was saying before.
Yeah.
As a professor of students who are most all Mormon, but also a lot of whom are from outside of Utah, I see more animosity from non-Utah Mormons towards Utah Mormons than I sometimes hear from non-Mormon Utahns towards Utah Mormons.
They're dismissive about, I'm not from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that imply something? Ann Cannon, I'm not sure how much you want to talk about this publicly, but your experience with your kids in soccer, it was interesting as a Mormon, had an experience of sort of being outside of the culture.
Yeah, I mean, and actually it was such a valuable experience. And I recommend that every Mormon has this experience because I'm the kind of mother who never signs any kid up on time for anything. I ended up being on one of my kids ended up being on a soccer team where all of the other families were from a private school here in Salt Lake City. And we were not. And it was just exactly one of those experiences where the mothers all knew each other. The kids all knew each other.
Yeah.
We got left out of everything. And my kid never got sent in from the bench. Maybe he sucked. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know.
But it was like, oh, this is how it must feel?
Right. And that's exactly right. I mean, I appreciated that experience just because I thought, here it is. And this is what it feels like. And you just need to be aware of that, I think. So, yeah. And then sometimes my kids felt, because they mostly grew up in a neighborhood that wasn't Mormon, and they had friends that were Mormons and non-Mormons, and that was great. But at times they felt like some people looked down on them for being gullible or stupid. Or you know, those kinds of things a little bit. So it's interesting how these things play out.
Here's an email from Jacob who writes, as a non-Mormon, I find it nearly impossible to be in a serious long-term relationship with a member of the LDS Church. And I'm sure it goes both ways. It's gotten to a point where I don't even bother asking LDS girls out, as I know their beliefs would inhibit the progress of a relationship between us. Now this, Frank Pignanelli, seems like a big deal. This is one of those things where a Mormons, even pretty liberal Mormons, for the most part, won't abide any kind of crossing over.
I married a Mormon.
Yeah, you did. That's true.
I did. It's
and it was controversial, was it not, in her family?
Oh, yeah, both our families, yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, you're right. And I dated a lot of – in fact, most women I did date. Not all, but most women I did date were LDS. And you're right.
You didn't have many choices, did you? I mean
But there was as many Nazi Catholic girls as there were Mormon girls, too. And I found out, that's the last thing I want to do. So you're right. And you get to a certain point where, okay, they're going to want me to do something. And I have had a fair number of wonderful LDS women who said, Frank, I had a dream and, you know, you and I are going to get married and be a bishop. That was my signal to go. And you're right. You have to have fun, but you're going to have to find someone that's accommodating and say, look, I will support you going to sacrament meetings, but I may be at home. And when you're in a population, 70% is the same faith, you're going to run into some of that. But at the same time, you have to keep on pitching. Because if it's not, he's going to run into the same problems in Texas or, you know, down south where it's the evangelical Christians, where there's so many of the same faith. And I do believe your mate's out there, and it may be someone's LDS, but only say, I love you where you are. Maybe one day you come over.
I think that's fine and good, but there's also the temple. I mean, you know, that's a big deal for everyone, but particularly for girls. They strive for that. They have that vision in their heads of getting married in the temple. So if you're not going with me, Frank, we're not going. Right?
So that's how
it is.
So how does it work? Let's say, so in, and I'm sure you've encountered this kind of thing too. So if you are, Allison, from your perspective, and maybe you're new to this because your kids are fairly young still, right? But I'm wondering how it works. So what do you say to your kids who are non-Mormon, who want to hang out with the Mormon kids, maybe date the Mormon? I mean, is there always this sort of understanding that it's fine to kind of hang out, but don't get too serious because this is not – you're not really worthy for my kid. Is that too
– I would never say that.
No, I'm not saying – I'm saying the
oh,
reverse.
Oh, on the reverse? I don't – I mean –
And I mean worthy advisedly. It's a term that comes up in Mormonism all the time.
Right. I think that the thing you tell your children – is the worst is the thing they want the most. So I don't intend to put any rules on like dating Mormon boys, you know?
Yeah.
I have no doubt that my girls will be spirited. I don't know why. But I'm not going to put any rules on that. And I think they're going to find those relationships on their own and they're going to discover who they are. It would be shocking to me. I have no idea what will happen. It would be shocking to me if one of my children got married in the temple. But it's out there. I mean, it might happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't. It's not something I can worry about right now because I'm pretty much going to put them in cages till they're like 30.
Yeah.
But it's there. You're right.
It's there.
But is that a reason to leave the state?
No.
I would say not.
Yeah. Here's an email from Carlos who writes, "Never been Mormon, came from Mexico. I'm a secular humanist. I socialize with both Mormons and non-Mormons. What I've heard from time to time," he writes, "is the pressure for Mormons of being temple-worthy by not associating with those who oppose the church. There's an inherent assumption," he says, "that being non-Mormon means against and counter to the church." Eric Eliason, you want to respond to that?
Just I suppose in some cases that's true, but in a lot of cases I don't think that is. And I think sometimes we as Mormons misunderstand any disagreement as an attack. And I think someone mentioned before that, about how Latter-day Saints have a history of persecution in which, you know, circling the wagons isn't just a metaphor for us. It's something we actually did. And it's maybe something we're a little hypersensitive to and could do better in that sense. I just got to say, though, when Frank's a bishop, I want to be in his ward.
Don't we all?
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Paul has been waiting. He's in Sandy. Paul, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine, thanks.
Well, my comment is I just come from a family. I'm the only person, including my mom and my brother, who isn't baptized in LDS. I grew up in Wisconsin for 12 years, and so by the time I came to Idaho and then finally Utah, I was old enough to where I could read the book, and then I had some issues, and I didn't end up going with the church. And I had a grandma who was dying of cancer, and they actually tried to leverage that her death into me getting baptized. So I think that's where a lot of the cliches come from. And then I'm glad you guys are talking about temple weddings, because my family, obviously, they're all temple-worthy, great, upstanding citizens. I'm not allowed to go to those kind of functions. And when I do go to those functions at people's houses or such, I have to deal with the prayer. And so I guess I'll just take my answer off there, but I was just wondering if you guys had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a good one. Anne, what do you think?
Well, you know, I do think that that whole issue of temple marriage does create issues. And I do know that people feel really, really excluded there. And I always feel really bad about that. I mean, I just do, because it does seem like a time when really family should be together in every single sense of the word. So all I can say is that I feel bad about that.
Yeah.
I do think that in terms of going into another person's home and having to put up with their prayers, I mean, I do think that you have to realize it is their home, and that's something that they do and that they feel comfortable with, and they're inviting you to be there with them. So, you know, it's just that kind of stuff.
Here's an email from Kurt who writes, "I think that the on-the-street interactions and neighborly comings and goings between Mormons and the others is usually cordial and pleasant, just as your guests are today. However, each side has certain unspoken behaviors that are diametrically opposed to each other. When these bubble to the surface, as in politics or public education or morality, then there can be resentment. Liquor laws, equality issues, etc., are the most obvious. The majority," Kurt writes, "can more easily get its way, leaving the minority resentful. One other interesting behavioral note that I've observed, though, since moving to the liberal part of town, is that people tend to choose physicians who are not LDS. Parents quietly inquire about schools to determine the LDS percentage of kids. Mm-hmm. Dinner groups are assembled with religious preference in mind. It's a quiet phenomenon, but it definitely happens."
Yeah, I have a friend whose mother was a realtor in town, and she often pitched where I live as the non-Mormon part of town, as
to the non-Mormons,
like it was a selling point for people moving in. And you understand that. I mean, you know, the horror stories that are out there and stuff like that. I mean, I totally get it. But there were times when I would just think, oh, come on, you know, really, we have to pitch it this way? But
and
there you have it.
It's creating a division that it's artificial. I mean, you don't need to necessarily, it doesn't need to be that way unless they ask about it.
Right,
if they ask
right.
about it, then the issue's already there.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It seems as though Mormons have a kind of – have moral objections about the way some non-Mormons socialize. We've talked about alcohol. That's one function. But I wonder, is this also, you know, about language and themes of certain conversations, whether they're in keeping with the way Mormons define their lives as, you know, they want to live a pious life. They don't like cursing. They don't like particular movies. They don't like particular – I mean, is that also – I mean, alcohol is one of those clear – things that you can see. You can see it's there in the cup. It's there in the bottle. But the other stuff, is that also a factor, do you think, in these relationships?
Well, I think it can be for some. But again, I think it's a bad idea to just generalize. I think it really depends on the people that are involved. I mean, don't you?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I have friends who I do socialize with that are Mormon.
And that swear? Like yeah, you used well, to work they... with one named me. Right?
They swear. They don't hit the, they don't hit the really bad ones, you know. The occasional like A word or something comes out. And that's fine. I generally don't. If you can't handle the way that I speak to you, I generally, you know, I, whether you're right. Mormon or not, I kind of have a bad mouth.
There is something to
much
that.
Worse than Anne.
like one of the guiding principles for my professional social career is with that great literary achievement, The Godfather. And I'm constantly using references to The Godfather, and yet a number of my LDS friends said, you know, I've never seen that. It's an R-rated movie. Right.
And that was the first one I ever saw.
And we just hired an employee who
with
was...
With my mother.
Good choice. Oh, bad choice. Yeah. Bad choice.
No, she did. She took...
I saw the Clean Flix version.
Yeah. You can find those now.
All 3 minutes of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we just hired an employee, and she had not seen The Godfather. And I said, your assignment is to go watch it. And because it's part of the culture. I think you're right. There's some of that happens. It's R-rated movie and things like that. And that's unfortunate, but the more we can understand and encourage them to participate, because this isn't just non-Mormon, just part of the American culture, that somehow they're worried about, they're nervous about the internet and things like that. And that's why I love living in the state, because at the end of the day, what you have is a group of people focused not just on making money. It's a focus on trying to be better people. And that's why this is a great place to live.
Well, sometimes I will hear Mormons say this. Like, I will honestly tell you that I really never hear Mormons badmouth non-Mormons in the way that maybe non-Mormons might think that they will. They will say this sometimes, though. They'll say, you know, sometimes I get so tired of how resentful people are because so many of the good things about this state grow also out of the culture, you know, as well as a lot of the problematic things about the state do. And so sometimes they'll feel some resentment about that.
That's true.
801.
I know.
Go ahead, Professor.
I've talked to one of my non-LDS friends, and I've admitted this several times, that thinking that, you know, if I weren't LDS, I'm not sure I'd want to live here. I didn't grow up here in Utah. My dad was in the Air Force, lived all over the place, but I really like it here. But I know that a lot of the reasons I really like it are because of the overwhelming Mormonness. And unlike a lot of people Mormons from out of the state, I like that. But I told this to one friend, and she said, "Are you kidding? This place is so cool. I mean, it's so fascinating." Well, she's a folklorist too, so people's cultures and things, I mean, are all
lots
interesting
to
her.
Right.
And lots to explore. And she loves it when somebody comes over and asks her why she hasn't been to Relief Society. It's like, I just had a Mormon experience. That's really cool. and I guess maybe all of us here in Utah live in a state where there's lots of opportunities to approach it that way. I mean, for Mormons and the various community, you know, Gentile communities that of different or no religion, there's lots of opportunities for us to be curious and learn about each other's unique ways. And that I like about Utah as well.
People have probably noticed I've been blowing through all these breaks. There's no point at this point. 801-585-WEST is the number to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Brad is with us. Brad, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about the flip side. I was raised LDS. My wife was not. Right before we got married, she converted. We are raising our kids LDS, but her entire side of the family is not LDS. We have been to a couple of family functions when we first got married, and since then we are never invited, never asked about it, nothing like that. Now my kids are getting a little bit older, and they're saying, well, why can't we go see our cousins? We'd love to spend time with them. We'd love to play with them. I don't know, you know, what to tell them, what to do, anything like that.
Is this another one of those things where you just feel bad about it? What do you do? I mean, Allison, you want to say something?
I think I have active family members, and I would never, ever keep my children from their cousins. Because that's an issue that you're putting on them as parents. Mm-hmm. So that's just a discussion you need to have with, you know, very honestly with someone else. Look, we're family. And I mean, I think you have to be able to have that discussion, whether it's with your neighbor or your brother or your cousins or whatever. I think that's just bad parenting. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your children, but God bless you.
One of the things, like, for example, I went to a Catholic school. I was with nuns and priests. I mean, it was all the hats and horns at a Catholic school here. And I was there for 9 years, and my parents pulled me out because they were worried at what they were seeing. And I think there's some – do you have some religious communities that are not LDS, that they become defined by the fact that they're not Mormon.
Right, right.
And that is a terrible thing, but it does happen. And so that's one of the things that they need to work against, is that we're here for different reasons, not because we're to provide opposition.
Yeah. Here's an email from Jimmy who wrote, I grew up in Ireland in the 60s and 70s. Utah's eerily reminiscent of that environment. 90% Catholic, completely shared culture, political environment. Ireland changed dramatically, he writes, in the 80s and 90s because of immigration and the church falling out of favor. What will happen in Utah as we see more and more diversity? That's a question I want to put to all of you. Let me read this, which comes from Rachel, who writes, some changes I really appreciate. She says she thinks that non-Mormon relationships have improved a lot over the past few decades. Mm-hmm. She says some of the changes I appreciate are my Mormon friends talking about their neighborhoods now rather than their wards.
Right, right.
I don't know if this was an official decree from on high, but it's a change. I've noticed a lot. This may seem like a small semantic thing, but it creates a more inclusive sense of community. What about that? Are you guys sensing a change? Is there any kind of transformation going on? Allison, you say yes?
I say absolutely, and I think that's part of why I think it's going to change dramatically. And I think the more it changes, the harder the folks on high try to keep it, you know, a stranglehold. I think it's very scary. I think it's very threatening, but the state is changing. The city is changing dramatically, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I like to joke that when people ask me what's it like to live in Utah, I say it's terrible. It's horrible. The Mormons are horrible. You can't get a drink, because I simply don't want us to get any more crowded, right?
Right.
But it's not true. It's actually a fantastic place to live if you have the right attitude and you can have a conversation with people.
But you've got to take it in. You've got to put it in perspective. You've got to have the attitude.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And that doesn't matter where you live. I mean, I've lived in the South. You have to have a whole different attitude to live down there. Yeah. But, you know, you have to be flexible, I think.
And is it changing, you think?
Well, it seems like it is to me. I mean, again, I sometimes think my experience is a little atypical, but I feel good about it. I mean, I just feel like I just know so many people of goodwill everywhere that really want things to feel like a community. So I think that's great.
Professor, what do you think?
I know from the past that we're not at the state now where – it's been the lowest percentage of Mormons in Utah. In the early 20th century, there was a time when it was just barely 55% Mormon, and now I think we're at 66, so it seems to fluctuate back and forth, and we've survived this far. Who knows what the future will bring?
Is the younger – I'll put this to you quickly because we don't have a lot of time. Is the younger generation of Mormons, do they have that's adding value judgment to it. Do they have a different sense of being inclusive, put it that way?
I think so on a lot of levels, and that's a very short answer for a very short amount of time we have left.
True, Frank?
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. In our house, we do listen to the conference. And once in a while, you'll pick up the different talks saying, please reach out to your non-Mormon, make them feel included. And you see different things that are happening in terms of with how the church deals with stuff. I believe it is getting better, and I really apportion a lot of that credit to the LDS Church.
It's Frank Pignanelli. He is an attorney, political advisor, and newspaper columnist, also non-Mormon. That's pretty clear by now. Catholic. Frank, thanks very much for being with us. Thanks also to Allison Enerson. She manages the Winter Farmers Market for the Downtown Alliance. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks.
Ann Cannon, of course, columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. Thank you very much for being with us. And Professor Eric Eliason, professor of folklore at Brigham Young University. Professor, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you.
Let me mention, people have plenty to say about this, so go to our website and continue the conversation. And let me mention our companion website, of course, Video West, to watch this week's featured documentary short. It's a piece that comes from Salt Lake filmmakers Skip Armstrong and Anson Fogel. It's a reflection on being part of the flow of life in the waters and the canyons of Utah's desert. Go to videowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Thank you.